You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ. 103.5 The Light, Detroit made, Bible strong, talking today about leading by example. Well, most business leaders eventually discover that their education, their leadership skills, and years of hard work do little to prepare them for leading through the realities of a family business. And the critical challenges encountered, if not harnessed, can actually tear a family business apart. And my next guest knows all about this. He is a third-generation successor who has worked for 20 years in family business. He's a graduate of the University of British Columbia and the Harvard Business School. He serves as an adjunct professor at the Sauder School of Business. As the founding principal of Next Step Advisors, he is a sought-after consultant, workshop leader, and mentor. So now you know why we have him here. He's the author of the book, Dear Younger Me, Wisdom for Family Enterprise Successors. I want to welcome to the program David Bentall. How you doing, David?
Great, Chris. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you today.
It's an honor to have you with us, and we're talking about leadership from many different facets. Those of us who remember leaders that inspired us in our childhood, I have many when I was in school and then when I was in athletics and when I was in theater. We're also talking about leaders that we've had in the workplace and then leaders that have inspired us in the body of Christ. And I'm fascinated by this concept of, you know, writing a letter to our younger self, dear younger me. And what comes to mind, I would probably, David, start that letter with, dear younger me, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
But how did you come up with this idea?
Well, thanks. It became a little more than a letter because it ended up with 100,000 words. But I had a lot to say. I had a lot to say to my younger
dear younger me. You better sit down for this one.
Yeah, but Chris, you know, I've been, as you mentioned in your kind introduction, you know, I worked in our family company for 20 years, and then the last 25 years since our family companies were sold, I've been advising other families in business, serving them as a succession planning consultant, helping them with family meetings. And Chris, as I was on my way home, I'd had two family meetings, each in different cities. And I was on an airplane back when you could fly around the continent. And I was on my way home from two family meetings. And Chris, I'd prepared well for these meetings, but they hadn't gone very well. And I was thinking, you know, what happened? And I was reflecting on the meetings. And I thought, you know, in meeting number one, one of the successors, one of the next generation, was really angry, and that put a damper on the whole meeting. And then the other meeting, thinking about it, and you know, one of the members of the next generation was really impatient, and that really clouded the whole meeting. And I thought, gosh, I'm glad I wasn't like that when I was younger. Or was I? And Chris, I had to realize as I reflected on it, you know, I had been really angry as a young man. I'd been really impatient. And I started listing, looking back, you know, benefit of hindsight, 25 years after our family company was sold. And I realized it didn't take me more than 10 minutes with a scrap of paper at my seat in the airplane to list 9 or 10 ways I had been really unhelpful. Not only was I angry, not only was I impatient, I lacked empathy, I lacked forgiveness, I lacked gratitude, I lacked contentment, I lacked humility, didn't listen to others. And so I've written this book, Chris, to try and help members of the next generation coming up in a family business to begin to cultivate these character traits that would have radically changed my career. And so I wanted to help the next generation learn how to deal with their impatience and their anger in ways that are more productive than me.
Wow. And a very honest assessment on your part, David, because arguably one of the greatest virtues of any leader is the ability to see themselves for what they are, to not just be transparent, but to be humble enough to understand their strengths. And I think it's okay to be confident in what you're good at, but also to understand your weaknesses. Great leaders, in fact, surround themselves with people who are much better than they are, given their list of weaknesses, right? Because you want, as a team, to be successful.
Yeah, we can't all be good at everything, and you're absolutely right. You know, I had the privilege of playing on championship rugby teams in high school and university, and I wasn't good at everything. I was known as a rugby player who liked to tackle people, but I didn't like to run with the ball. So I was surrounded by guys who liked to run with the ball, and they were happy that I'd do the tackling. So
yeah, was that in Canada? Was that in British Columbia?
Yeah.
Rugby is a pretty rough sport, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Some people say that the difference between soccer and rugby is that rugby is a hooligan's game, but it's played by gentlemen, whereas a soccer is a gentleman's game played by hooligans. So
that's perfect.
It was great fun to play, but it's a tough game. You're absolutely right.
And so I think I look at someone like you who has been educated, who obviously has written multiple books, who has taught others. I'm intrigued by understanding from you, David, who were some of the leaders that influenced you that you learned some of these traits, some of these virtues from?
Well, Chris, I'd love to talk to you about those, but if I could just go back, in the book, Dear Younger Me, I actually realized that some of the people who'd influenced my leadership style had led me astray inadvertently. I mean, these were iconic leaders. Everyone's heard of Winston Churchill, an mm-hmm. iconic leader. Athletic fans, football fans would know of Vince Lombardi, who the Super Bowl trophy is named after. These, for me, Chris, were my heroes growing up. I wanted to lead like them. And, you know, Winston Churchill is known for saying, amongst other things, you know, never, never, never give up.
Yes.
So I brought that as one of my mantras to my leadership style as a young man. And then Vince Lombardi is famous for saying, you know, winning's not the most important thing. It's the only thing. So I brought that to my leadership style. Well, you put those two together, it's a toxic combination. Never give up and winning's the most important thing. Were the only thing. And Chris, I brought those traits into my leadership style in a family business. Now, those leadership traits might be fine if you're playing football, if you're or if you're at war, but I had the wrong mentors. And so, right. I realized later in life that, you know, had I chosen, Nelson Mandela, who is known for forgiving the people who put him behind bars for 27 years, or Mother Teresa, who was known for her empathy, or people like Einstein, who is known for his curiosity, or Benjamin Franklin, who was known for his humility. So, Chris, frankly, I realized later on in life I had the wrong mentors, and that's what I've written about: is encouraging people to pick the right mentors, especially for the circumstance they're in, if they're in a family business.
And just out of curiosity, so that I understand this idea of winning is the only thing and never, never give up. How did the combination of those two things impede your ability to lead?
Oh, great question. So my dad and his brothers were co-owners of a national company in Canada, construction and real estate business. It was voted one of the 100 best places to work in Canada. And my grandpa was a member of the Business Hall of Fame. My dad was acknowledged as a member of the Order of Canada. These were people who were, they built a successful business, wonderful reputation. But I started working with my uncle, who was president of our company. And whenever we disagreed, I brought never, never, never give up into our conversations. I brought.
You were just biting at the bit to share that, weren't you, David?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was, that's exactly right. Chris, I've often said that sadly, I forfeited my opportunity to lead our family business because of how I botched my relationship with my uncle. And it was because there was too much Vince Lombardi and too much Churchill in my approach to leadership, especially as it came to relating to my uncle.
So you had to become kinder and gentler, to quote one former U.S. president.
Yeah, exactly right. And unfortunately, I've not had a chance to learn that now that I'm outside of our family company. Had I learned that in the business, it might have been different.
Yeah, right? Not that you were booted out.
Oh, yes, I was.
Oh, you were booted out.
Oh, I was. Absolutely.
Okay. So they said, yeah. David, thank you. It's over.
No, they didn't say thank you.
Okay.
They just said goodbye. No, it was.
There's the door.
Yeah, there's the door. Oh, it was. Chris, it was horrible. It was a nightmare. Yeah.
Wow. So this is really a gut-wrenching testimonial, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
We're going to continue our conversation with David Bentall. He is the author of the book, Dear Younger Me. And we'll be asking him what he wanted that Dear Younger Me to truly understand. Took him a lot of pages to write it, but what a great read. The publisher is Castle Key, and you can learn more at his website at nextstepadvisors.ca. More with David Bentall when we return. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit Made Bible Strong.
WMUZ FM HD1 Detroit, 103.5 The Light, streaming online at WMUZ.com. Detroit Made Bible Strong.
You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ, 103.5 The Light, Detroit Made Bible Strong. My guest is David Bentall. He is the author of the book, Dear Younger Me. So, David, I know we only have a few minutes, but what would you tell, and how old would your younger me be when you would kind of sit him down and kind of give him, not the third degree, but a little pep talk?
Well, it's funny. Maybe when I was in grade five and my dad said, son, turn off the television. Can't be president unless you do your homework. I mean, dad started preparing me, Chris, to become president of the company when I was in grade five. So maybe then. But the book was written thinking about my 20 or 30 something self, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I first started in the business.
Yeah. So you would have been a young adult. But were you, and I'm guessing you were an ambitious man.
Yeah, I mean, my dad invited me to consider becoming a part of the family company with the express intent. He wanted me to lead the business. He wanted me to follow granddad and himself as president of the company. So that was the goal that dad shared with me. So I bought in fully.
Yeah. So if you had a short list, what would that look like for your dear younger me?
Well, number one, Chris, would be to recognize that your job as a leader should be delayed until you've learned to be a follower first. That'll be the first, you know, I came into the business at age 21 ready to lead, and I should have come in ready to follow.
Well,
and
if I'd, go ahead, David. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, just, you know, good leaders are good followers. And
yes.
So I was aiming at the wrong thing right from the very beginning.
And that's powerful in my experience as well, because in the corporate world, you know, having kind of aged through the ranks, you know, having been sure. with one company for nearly 27 years and then seeing, you know, I'm dating myself when I see,
yeah.
when I say those young whippersnappers that were
yeah.
coming
yeah.
in that felt, look, you know, I've got a master's degree. I've done it, baby. I'm wearing my suit. I'm looking good. And I
yeah.
should be vice president. And I'm like, wait a minute. You have no leadership experience. You don't even know how to manage, let alone lead people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and for me, Chris, you know, I was full of ideas. And I think the other thing I would say to my dear younger self would be to cultivate patience and to cultivate listening skills. You know, I was so busy talking. I didn't want to listen to what other people had to say. And I was so impatient to lead that I didn't spend the time learning from others. You know, I had there were great people around me, and I could have learned from them. I could have been a sponge. I would have been better to be a sponge rather than a talking head.
And why do you suppose that was? That you didn't have the patience? Was it an insecurity? Were you trying to overachieve and maybe make your mark or make a statement? Were you just cocky?
Well, it's interesting. I think, Chris, that the number one thing was I just did the math. My dad ran the company before him. My grandpa ran the company. And my uncle was going to be retiring in 10 years. He was going to be 65. So I just did the math. I thought, I got to be ready in 10 years. It never occurred to me maybe we could have someone else, non-family, lead the business for a while. So I just did the math. And I got to be ready in 10 years.
Pressure on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I've met people who had to wait 20 years to lead the company. Like, how bad would it have been, in hindsight, Chris, how bad would it have been if I had to wait till I was 43 to lead the company?
Yes, like, would that ripe old age of 43.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of us who are getting older, 43 is pretty young in my book these days,
yeah,
David.
Exactly right. Exactly
well, right. That's impressive that you could outline these things. And I know, you know, you write about some of these amazing world leaders, heroes. I mean, people like Benjamin Franklin and Mother Teresa and Nelson Mandela. You've got chapters devoted, I guess, based on their traits, their virtues. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. is there anyone for you that's your number one, two, three?
Well, Walt Disney comes to mind. You know, I had the privilege as a preteen to actually sit on his golf cart on vacation. We have a picture of me sitting beside, you know, this famous iconic figure. But when I studied his life, I've read a number of his biographies. Walt Disney was a critical thinker. And Chris, as I look back over my life, I was a critic. There's a big difference between being a critic and a critical thinker. Walt Disney criticized ideas. He didn't criticize people. I criticized people. And I think if there was one of the traits that was the worst in my life, it was that I had a critical spirit. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned from Walt Disney to differentiate between being hard on ideas and soft on people. So he's a hero for me that way. Franklin, I'll never forget reading his biography. I had to reread it because I wasn't sure I was reading it correctly. He made a decision, and I'll quote, he said, "I decided to deny myself the privilege of ever disagreeing with anyone." Chris, that takes a lot of humility. Now, Franklin did all kinds of things. He was a statesman, et cetera, part of the drafting the U.S. Constitution, et cetera, but he made this radical decision to deny himself the privilege of disagreeing with anyone. So I've been working on putting that into practice. And then Mandela, like if Mandela can forgive, as I said earlier, people putting him in prison for over 25 years.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
You know, how can I not forgive others in our business? So these are three of the ones that are, for me, standout exemplars who I want to be more like.
Yeah, I really like that phrase, hard on ideas, soft on people. Yeah. There's probably a lot we can learn in that regard. And yet, you know, it's interesting, David, because we look at the worldview of success, and there are a lot of those traits you talked about earlier by Vince Lombardi and Winston Churchill. You know, I think of, you know, Lee Iacocca, who was chairman of
Chrysler. I wanted to be like him.
Yeah,
exactly right.
So there's this sense of leadership that, in a way, yes, that's how the world views success. But when you use words like humility and empathy, then some might constitute that as being soft or weak as a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. And Chris, I don't know if you've ever read Tony Dungy's book, Quiet Strength, but you know, Tony talks very candidly about how he felt a lot of people overlooked him as a potential coach in the NFL because, you know, he was not tough enough, right? He didn't cuss enough. And he said, you know, we can lead by having empathy and humility and teaching people rather than clubbing people over the head. And so, you know, Tony Dungy's proven by winning Super Bowls, you know, that you there's different ways of leading. And again, the audience I'm writing to in particular are people working in a family business. And we need to learn skills that build relationships rather than destroy relationships. And I think in a family enterprise context, Chris, that's particularly important. And also, as we seek to lead as Christian men and women, you know, our leadership ought to be different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, frankly, you know, as a young man, yes, I had a faith, but I didn't know how to live it. I didn't know how to show it in my leadership. And so I confess to you here, you know, I was not the reflection of God's love that I would have been, could have been, should have been.
Wow. And, you know, that humility, that openness, that transparency says a lot about you, David. And I'm encouraged by that. You know, I think of when you use the word mentor, you know, that to me is more than just a teacher. It's more than just a, I don't know, coach. It seems like you need to model behaviors. Then you need to state those behaviors. You need to lead by example. And then you need to inspire your protégés to kind of follow in what you feel is the right template for leadership.
Well, and that's why at the end of my book, Dear Younger Me, why I've spent so much time, you know, writing about people we've spoken of today, you know, Walt Disney and Franklin, Benjamin Franklin and Nelson Mandela and others. You know, I've also written about Kim Fook. I don't know if you've ever read her book, but most people don't know her name, but they remember seeing a picture of a 9-year-old girl in the 1970s on the front page of Time magazine whose skin had been, her clothes had been burnt off by napalm in the Vietnam War. Mm. She was the napalm girl. And she writes in her book called Fire Road about how she learned to be grateful for that day when her village was bombed by napalm. And you know, having met Kim and spoken with her, you know, what an inspiration she's been for me to so my day didn't go very well today, but there's things to be grateful for. And if she can be grateful in the midst of her village being bombed, you know, can't we choose to be grateful in the midst of a pandemic or a loss of a job or whatever it is that we're struggling with?
Right.
So that's why in the book I've lifted up these other exemplars, Einstein and others, because, you know, if we look to those who really have been iconic leaders, they can hopefully jolt us into looking at things differently.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating and riveting, because I love to read biographies. I love to learn, like, how did they think? How did they respond? You know, you mentioned Einstein. I mean, how did you learn through those? Because he had a teacher that basically said, you know, you're not worth much, my friend. You're not a very hard worker. You know, and, you know, this is like Einstein. You know, he was a poor student in school. You know, the man goes on to be a genius. And yet, you know, these defining moments, David, those experiences in life that seem to be the most traumatic for so many are actually moments in our making, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, I often joke that I got knocked off my horse, and that's what it took for me to take a look in the mirror, you know. And sadly, you know, I, as I said earlier, I had a golden opportunity in front of me that I forfeited. But you know, what I'm wanting to do is help younger generation leaders to look in the mirror. And you know, the Bible talks about us taking a sober assessment of ourselves. I think I had an inflated view of myself.
And yeah.
I want to encourage people. One last one I want to talk about. We haven't mentioned Gandhi. You know, he was an incredible leader, helping lead India towards independence.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, when you look into his life, you know, his signature characteristic was he was a great listener.
Yeah.
He became a leader by listening. You know, we think about great leaders as being orators or great speakers, like people like Churchill, but listening is an underrated trait of leadership. And
right.
So he's one of the men that I've been inspired by.
And I think that's important to take a step back and assess, because not all of these people in their own right were Christians, let alone Judeo-Christians.
Right.
But
right.
They modeled leadership that we can all learn from and apply in our own lives.
Yeah, well, if you look at the fruit of the Spirit, you know, patience and kindness and goodness, these are, if you list the nine traits that I've listed, empathy and curiosity and listening and humility, it's not the fruit of the Spirit, but it's not too far,
right.
Not too far off from
Christ-like
characteristics.
Do you have all the fruit of the Spirit down, you think?
No, I do not.
You and I both. What would be like your number one fruit if you said, look, I feel like the Lord has done a work in my life on this particular fruit? What would it be?
Well, I think I've been learning gentleness.
Very
good. Because I think, you know, as a rugby player, you know, I consider myself tough. I remember my sister saying to me one day, don't be so sensitive. And I got really angry that my older sister thought I was being sensitive. And I called one of my friends and I said, my sister said I'm being sensitive. And he starts to laugh. And he said, David, I've been a pastor for 30 years. You're the most sensitive man I've ever met.
Oh my God.
I thought being sensitive was a bad thing. He said, mm-hmm. No, that's actually a positive thing. So I think I've been learning gentleness. I think with our children, raising our three daughters and our son, you know, I think I had high standards,
yeah.
But I don't think I could ever have been accused of being gentle with them.
Wow.
And I think I'm learning gentleness. And that's important. I think God's changed me in that way.
Well, folks, it is a great read. And if you want to discover how to transform your leadership through humility, curiosity, listening, empathy, forgiveness, gratitude, critical thinking, patience, and contentment, you want to check out David's book. It's called Dear Younger Me, and the subtitle is Wisdom for Family Enterprise Successors. And he talks about character traits to transform leadership. He uses many of these leaderships that we've mentioned here today as models, as representatives of what leadership is, leadership styles, and what we can learn. And David, I've learned a lot from you today.
Well, thanks, Chris. It's been great fun to just chat with you a little bit. And you coaxed out of me some confessions here. So thank you for helping me look again in the mirror and realize what's happening in my
Nobody
life.
Nobody will know, David. It was just between you and me. I don't think there was anybody else listening. And again, folks, want to just reiterate, the title is Dear Younger Me, and you can learn more at David's website at nextstepadvisors.ca. David, we'd love to have you back.
I'd love to do it, Chris. Thanks so much for the opportunity to chat
today.
God
bless you.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit Made Bible Strong.